Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
We all know that companies track what we do on work devices. If, for example, you're listening to this show right now on a company phone or a laptop, your boss could probably find that out, assuming they wanted to. Now here's where it gets darker. Your boss might not have to bother finding out. An AI-driven worker surveillance program may be logging everything you do right now, completely automatically. So, if you're listening to this podcast on a company device, your boss doesn't need to think about it. A machine will note it the way it notes everything you do on that device, and it will catalog it. Maybe you work in podcast advertising, so it classifies it as working or research. More likely, though, you don't. And this goes into the non-work or goofing off pile. Maybe the machine has been told to flag certain terms, like the word surveillance, for instance, that's in the title of this episode, or other terms, like union. And then somewhere in HR, a little notification is added to a virtual pile or a little flag to your file. And once those notifications or flags reach a certain level, someone, or maybe even just something, decides what to do about it. That's just an easy example. The tip of a pretty dystopian iceberg. You want to know how deep it goes? And if anyone is doing anything to stop it? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story.
Valerio Di Stefano is a Canada Research Chair in Innovation, Law, and Society. He's somebody we come to when it's time to talk about employment and surveillance and artificial intelligence and all of that relatively dystopic stuff. Valerio, how you doing?
I'm fine, Jordan, and thank you so much for having me.
I'm sitting right now working on my company laptop. My phone is a company phone. I don't know exactly what my employer is doing to watch me or track me, but what might they be able to do if they wanted to?
We shouldn't think about employment surveillance as something that needs, W7 devices to surveil people. Even your Outlook badge, when it turns green or red or yellow, depending on how long you were away from the screen, can offer your employer an indication of whether you are sitting in before your computer and using Outlook or not. And if the employer wants to assume that when the banner is red, you are not working, they might do so. It will be, in most cases, a very wrong assumption. But the point with employer surveillance is that it's not always reasonable or it's not always even correct. In many cases, these systems can be very flawed. Then we have a series of other devices, software that are much more sophisticated, if you want. And we can speak about software that track your keystrokes, how many keystrokes you give in a certain moment of time, but also take random screenshots of your laptop without you knowing about it, or browse your email or data history. We are talking about a full range of software and devices when we are talking about white-collar occupations. So this is what we have to think about, that basically anything in our device, if they are controlled or owned by our employer, can give them data and information about what we are doing when we are at work and very often also once we are off the clock.
So we spoke about this a little over a year ago, and it was in relation to the rise of these technologies during the totally work-from-home times of the pandemic, and even now as employees have started to return to the office.
It was, however, before the current onslaught of artificial intelligence-based technology. How has AI changed workplace surveillance in general?
Well, it does change it in many different ways. It has changed it in a, if you want, meaningful way, because AI allows to process all this data in a way that is more seamless, or seems more seamless for employers, and also in some cases cheaper, not always effective. We always have to take into account that we should not take at face value that the apps or technology can do what they promise to do. But actually, what has also changed is that the hype around artificial intelligence has convinced companies, employers, managers, that you can actually use artificial intelligence to do their own jobs, that they can basically outsource to AI some of the vital function of management. Again, this is a big misconception, but the fact that everyone speaks about AI, even if in some cases these software are far light years distance from being artificial intelligence properly intended, but all this hype has created, if you want, an even bigger incentive to employer managers to look around to the next shiny widget that they can find that basically promise them that they can track productivity of people, and they buy it. And once they buy it, it's very difficult to roll these things back. And you mentioned the pandemic. We saw these things skyrocketing under the pandemic, but as you notice, once employees are starting to go back to the office, these systems are not being rolled back, okay? They still are there. They stuck because they already have been purchased, leased, acquired in many different ways, and people are not going to walk back unless they are forced to roll back.
When you say employers and managers are outsourcing some of their jobs and the things they should be doing to AI tools, can you give me some concrete examples of what exactly they'd be using them for?
Well, again, you use technology that tracks how many keystrokes you give to your keyboard in a certain amount of time, or to take random screenshots. And if, for instance, when you take the screenshot, I'm looking at the Globe and Mail, maybe you can infer that I'm not doing my job and you sanction me. But your job as a manager is not making sure that I am tied to my chair all the time and that my eyes fixed on my spreadsheet all the time. Your job as a manager is to ensure that I do my work. And if I do my work, and if I'm more effective in doing my work by from time to time going and looking at the news, there is nothing wrong about it. It's completely impossible for humans to concentrate on an intellectual task for 8 hours straight. That is not how our brains are wired. You cannot make me concentrate on a single piece of thing for 8 hours. I will be distracted. And in many cases, distraction also helps productivity. It helps to rewire your brain. It helps to get new ideas. And your job as a manager is to ensure that I deliver on what I should deliver, rather than micromanage the number of times I look at the news or go to the restroom.
Surveillance is one aspect of this job that AI can impact. And you know, so is attempting to, I won't say actually doing it, but attempting to measure productivity. What about the use of AI in making decisions that should be made by a human or a manager who has some semblance of personal knowledge of the employee or potential employee involved?
So this is a crucial question. Thank you for asking it. The thing with productivity is that it's extremely difficult to define it, let alone code it into a software. And the reason why it is difficult to define it, it's because it's extremely difficult to define what our jobs are, okay? If I asked you what your job is, you will tell me what you do, but you wouldn't immediately tell me all the things that you do at work that are not necessarily written down in your contract, and you do anyway because otherwise you couldn't do your work, okay? So there is no way a software can encapsulate all the nuances, all the elements that go in a job description, let alone when this software is programmed by people that don't know at all the job that they are supposed to be tracking, and basically assume that a job is something that you can code, okay? The job of a medical doctor cannot be coded. The job of a journalist cannot be coded. The job of a lawyer cannot be coded. Those are things that are extremely complex and you cannot turn them into just digits. And this is why this software is, in many cases, is very unreliable and flawed. Now, the point is, once you accept that you can use this software to track productivity, if you assume that someone is lacking at the desk because from time to time, the screenshot you took was on the news and you fire these people or you discipline these people just because of that, you are not doing your job as a manager. So outsourcing decisions to algorithms, outsourcing decisions to machines, in many cases, is flawed. And this is why in some jurisdictions around the world, we are starting to see a resistance to the idea that managers can completely outsource these decisions to machines. The EU, the European Union, has just agreed on a new piece of legislation about platform work, which is work for companies like Uber, Uber Eats, DoorDash. And this directive will enshrine a principle that says that you cannot fire a person and you cannot suspend their account by only using automated decision making. There must be a human being that takes a decision to fire someone or to disconnect their account.
We can talk more about what the EU is doing in a minute, because they seem to be, at least among governments, on the leading edge of this. But what I want to get at with that is, at the end of the day, what is the difference between having an AI for Uber Eats or DoorDash or whatever automatically suspend the account of an employee or a worker who's not meeting whatever standard, or having somebody, one person, get a summary of who's not meeting standards and then just pulling the button? Like, I guess my question is, how can you possibly regulate this stuff when it's moving so quickly and it's so easy to just put a person in there at the end of the line to say, yep, but all the data is actually informed by AI?
So again, if we're talking about this piece of legislation, all these systems, it will not just be about the final decision of firing one. All the systems must be vetted, monitored by human beings and reviewed along the way, including by worker representatives and trade unions in reviewing the systems. It is not just about putting a human rubber stamp. The decision to fire someone will have to be taken and reviewed by a human being in a meaningful way. So it's not going to be enough to just push a button. You will have to look at the actual performance, and probably it's not going to be enough that you just based your decision on the data that are collected. You will probably have to do more than that. And anyway, workers will be able to challenge that decision under that piece of legislation. So you will better come up with a good explanation. And again, the machine told me is not and is never going to be a good explanation.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Where is Canada right now in comparison to the AI regulations that have just been passed in Europe? Are we even close? Is there anything on the table? What is there here to protect workers from AI?
So unfortunately, in Canada, we are nowhere close to what the EU has been doing in terms of protecting workers. And again, it's not that I take all the things that come from the European Union as this panacea. There are some limitations and flaws also in those pieces of legislation. But what Canada is doing for the moment is adopting, both at the provincial level and at the federal level, a very individualized approach, meaning that the employer unilaterally can set up a policy about the use of AI or electronic monitoring The policy can say whatever the employer wants. And the only thing the employer has to do is to give this policy to the employees and explain what the policy says and how the systems are going to be implemented and what is the purpose of implementing the systems. But it's going to be enough to say, well, we're going to have this software installed in your computer. And if the software detects that you are slacking off, we are going to discipline you. And basically, in most workplaces, the employers will be good to go. This is not the way to operate. If you give me, as an individual employee, information about a system, well, I may be happy to know, but or in many cases, unhappy to know that these systems are in place, but then I have no recourse. And this is happening, and it has happened in the legislation that was passed a couple of months ago in Ontario. It just gives you this right to be informed about the use of electronic monitoring, but nothing else. You have no recourse. And the same is going to happen if Bill C-27, that is now currently discussed at the federal level, passes the way it is drafted. Even in that case, this bill is about artificial intelligence and the use of artificial intelligence in many realms of society. But there is a clause about employment that again says, you know, all the protection that you have about the use of AI if you are a customer. Well, if you are an employee, those protections don't apply to you. And the employer is good to go as long as they inform you that you're going to be monitored and evaluated by AI, and that's it. Well, again, this is not the way it should work. These policies should not be implemented unilaterally by employer. These policies should be negotiated with employees, with unions where unions are present. But anyway, employees should be involved in a much more meaningful way when these systems are introduced. And also, I mean, this is not just because, and it would be a very legitimate concern, we are concerned about surveillance. We're concerned about the invasiveness of these systems and the stress they create on people and the flaws that they have. But this is not enough. Having a dialogue with your employees and actually a meaningful dialogue, a mandated by the law dialogue, will also ensure that employees have a say about the system that they are going to use or they are going to track their productivity. And they will be able to give you feedback as an employer, especially if you don't know much about the job you're going to monitor. If you are a manager in a hospital, you know nothing about the work of a doctor. You cannot expect to get good unilateral decision-making policies if you don't consult the doctors. And again, the doctors are just an example. Journalists are the same. Lawyers are the same. All workers know about what they're doing in most cases more than their managers. And adopting policies unilaterally about the work that needs to be done is never a recipe for good productivity and good results.
Let me ask you about this from the employer's point of view, trying to maximize efficiency and maximize profits. Going back to that kind of surveillance, how can a manager looking at this data trust that AI-produced reports on employees are even accurate? And I ask this because as we've begun finding out more and more about AI systems like ChatGPT, we keep encountering things like straight-up hallucinations. It appears like this technology, and I'm not saying this to be specifically critical, but it's being rolled out at the same time as it's being refined. So is it even in a manager's best interests to use this to inform these decisions?
Look, artificial intelligence is a buzzword, okay? And it should not be mistaken for human intelligence. Probably is one of the worst labels that we could give to any of this technology. These are machines. They are sophisticated machines built by smart people, but they are not intelligent in the way we mean the word intelligence, okay? So managers should not trust and should not ever take at face value the results that these machines give. Also because in most cases, the machines are only good to do their specific task, okay? They cannot be used to do other things. And you use the example of ChatGPT. ChatGPT is a wonderful device for writing texts, okay? And what ChatGPT does is that it's able to build a convincing text. ChatGPT was never devised to give you correct answers. That is not the purpose of a large language model. So if you ask ChatGPT, what is the best cure for a cold? Good luck with that. Probably you shouldn't do it. So the point is that when we say the word intelligence, we think of something that is adaptable. These machines, in most cases, are not adaptable at all. They are very narrow in what they can do. So if you adopt an artificial intelligence that was used to track the productivity of a certain job to another job, this machine can hallucinate and give you completely flawed results. This is why it's important for managers, before implementing any of these, to vet these systems and also to ask the feedback of the people that are going to do the actual job and ask them, does it make any sense that we use this software that tracks these productivity metrics? In many cases, the answer will be no, because these metrics don't track actually what I'm doing all the time. Okay, so I can give you an example. A few years back, a software was tracking the work of doctors, and it was considering that doctors were working only when they were typing at their desk. Okay, so the software didn't think that when you talk to a patient and you are a doctor, you are working. You see how flawed that can be. Again, the machine is not intelligent in any meaningful way. It's just a tool.
While we're on the employer side of this, what about workers using AI to complete their tasks without the employer's knowledge? And obviously ChatGPT is a good example of this. But if, you know, your job was to make sales outreach emails, for instance, and I'm making this up here, and you decided to all of a sudden as a worker start automating that using ChatGPT, presumably there's nothing preventing you from doing that. But how does an employer deal with that?
Well, I don't see why the employer should deal with that. The point is that, again, if you're using ChatGPT, since you mentioned ChatGPT, to draft things, and these drafts are better than what you'll be able to produce, or maybe they give you ideas that you hadn't thought about, there's nothing wrong in using that. The point is when you rely on ChatGPT and you don't even read what ChatGPT writes before sending something to the client, this is where you get into real trouble, because, again, ChatGPT can very well hallucinate. But using any tool to enhance your productivity, I don't see why the employer should have any problem with that. Again, the idea should not be that we should tie it to our desk and do our jobs as robots for the 8 hours or whatever is the length of our shift. We should do what we need to do. We should produce outcomes and results. And if we can produce them without working as hard, all the better. Technology is here to help us doing things with less fatigue. And this is why we have tractors. This is why we have cars. This is why we have trains. And this is also why we use computer and software.
So how would an employer use AI to increase productivity then, leaving surveillance out of it?
Well, again, you just gave you a fantastic example. If your job is to write drafts, you can use ChatGPT to write up unpolished thing that you will be able to build on, okay? That will help you be more productive because you're going to do your job, in some cases, faster. You will always have to be on the lookout for flaws and errors, etc. But that can, in some cases, help you. The thing that we shouldn't do, however, is to demand that employees use ChatGPT and demand them to be more productive because of that. Because in some cases, ChatGPT will not help you. In some cases, you will have to rewrite the thing from the scratch. So we cannot expect that in the vast majority of cases, ChatGPT is going to be able to enhance productivity if you're talking about ChatGPT. And this goes with any other technology. Technologies can help us doing our jobs. But again, since we can never take them at face value for complex things, we shouldn't expect that people or assume that people just gain superpowers because of artificial intelligence. This is not the case. And so the idea that we can use AI as a panacea, as a magic wand to enhance productivity, is what should be contested, okay? We should not assume that AI can always help us be more productive. In some cases, it might. In some cases, it cannot.
Valerio, thank you so much for this. It's a really complex issue, and I appreciate you walking us through it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Valerio DiStefano, Canada Research Chair in Innovation, Law and Society.
That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. For Valerio's previous appearance on this show back before AI became even more terrifying. And you can suggest the next episode we do. What aspects of the artificial intelligence boom and perhaps soon bust would you like to see us cover? Let us know by sending an email to hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca or by calling us and leaving a voicemail at 416-935-5935. You can listen to The Big Story in every podcast player and on every device, company or not. And listen, if your boss is watching, you'll just know you have good taste. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.